to Aussie Tech Heads, podcasting live from the Secret Hub Studios on the Gold Coast, Australia. Sit back, relax, and listen for a while. Who knows? You might learn something.
Episode 470. Welcome, everyone. Another episode of Aussie Tech Heads. And it is 14th of January, 2016. We've got a heap of stories to get through tonight. So let's see how we go with all that. It's, we got a person back from the wilderness. But we'll get to him in just a second. I bet you can't guess who it is. You may go, Will, is it Will? Is it Jace? Is it Will? Is it Will? I don't know. And we'll get there in a second. But we are brought to you by athwebhosting.com.au. And if you need some web hostings, affordable prices, easy to work, cPanels, WordPress, you know, three-click installs of WordPress. Can't get any easier than that. About three clicks. It's all good. athwebhosting.com.au. All right, let's see who it is has come back after his holidays. Well, he just informed me that he wasn't on holidays, but I said you always seem to be. And it is, of course, Jace. How you doing,
hey,
Jace?
Hey, how's it going? But can I get Drew Powell? That's the really important thing.
Drew Powell is available across multiple servers of athwebhosting.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. You like the shirt?
It is good. I defeated Christmas. The Daleks, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. Very good. Very good. What a great series of Doctor Who it was, too, Series 9. You enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah. Especially the end of it when he was trapped in the dial thing. That was great.
Yes. Yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah, was that one of your favourites?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Mine was probably a toss-up between the maybe the first one, very first story. Yeah, it was great. I couldn't get past that when that little kid said his name was Davros. So she was down my spine, and it was just all my childhood memories and excitement just went pushka. All right, let's see who else we got. Shane. Hey, Shane, how you doing?
Hey, good. I have a question about Doctor Who because I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
What?
You just said it was
Sorry, we can't talk to you now. Can you just disconnect his internet connection and get him off Skype?
I could be converted, depending on how this answer goes.
That's more than Eric anyway, so that's something.
You just said it was Series 9.
Yeah.
Hasn't Doctor Who been going for like 50 or 60 years?
Well, yes, it has.
Series 9 of the reboot.
Yes, that's right. So what happens is it's like Series 9 of the 2005, of the reboot, so to speak. Yes.
Okay, so what was before that?
Well, it was a classic series, so I suppose, from 1963 to, 2004. Yeah. But 80, yeah, I know you said 89.
Around the 80s. Yeah. They stopped in the 80s with Doctor Who number 8, and then it went off the air for ages, and then Russell T Davies wanted to bring it back, so he wrote a few shows and got approval from BBC, and then they just restarted it as one, and they call it the new ones.
Yeah, so it's season 9. That's it. That's
okay.
That's how the cool cats call it.
Yep.
That's what we do, you know. That's us.
Okay.
All right. So no Will again.
We've lost our Will to live again.
Oh, I know. I texted him or Facebooked him today, and he was, the show's at around the baby's bedtime. Wah, wah, wah. You know.
The big baby or the little one?
Yeah, it was a bit of a change from, yeah, don't worry, you know, the kid will be asleep by the time I'm doing the podcast. I'll be right. I'm there every week. Don't worry. I haven't seen him since I was born. So,
exactly.
Yeah, good on him. And Eric is, I don't know, on holidays. So, hello,
he's the
Eric.
One on holidays. See, that's what got you.
Yes, that must have been what it was. Must have been.
No, I work from home now for an anti-spam company called Cloudmark. So I got the job after 4 interviews and a lot of weeks of waiting, and then they flew me up to Central Coast to train with a friend of mine who's been working with them for about 3 years, and then flew me back down to Melbourne again. I just had to wait a couple of days, and they sent me a MacBook Pro. Was the one I picked. It could have been like a Dell with Windows, but I picked a MacBook Pro because I like to get the good quality.
Yeah.
And I just work from home, VPN into work, and we fight the spammers.
How good's that? So how do you fight? Like, do you trace where they're coming from, or do you just sort of filter them?
Yeah, we trace where, based on the emails, you know, we filter out domains. Well, we remediate them, so we give them a what they call a There's a promotion or a demotion of the IP or domain name usually, right. But we can also filter based on the content, which a lot of people don't do. So we can filter on text in the emails, types of images, that sort of thing. So every little thing they try and get around our system, you know, adding in http://.
Right.
Website.com and things like that we have to fight against.
So who are you fighting against for? Is it just a set of your customers or is it the wider internet?
Most of the major ISPs around the world.
Right, okay. Nice. Nice work. So next time I get a bit of spam, I can say Jace is not doing his job properly.
Yes, that's right. Unless it's on the Google one.
Yeah, and I'll send it to you. You go, Jace, you missed one.
Well, I can analyze it through our system and then we can add anything in like that.
Right.
Before I started there, my friend who recommended me for the job, I'd mentioned on Facebook, oh, I just got this spam that got through Google's filters into my inbox. And he's like, quick, what was it? Where was it? Who, what, when? Tell me everything. Send me a copy of it.
Yeah.
So I send it through to him and he can run it through the system and analyze it and see if there's anything that he needs to add into that system to be able to block it as well. So
nice. So is this a private company or is it part of the government in some way?
No, private company, and it's based in the UK and San Francisco. So in March, my boss who works in the UK is going to fly over to San Francisco to, you know, keep in touch with the guys over there. So he's going to fly me up for a week to meet the guys there. And
so you get a week in San Fran?
Yep, in March.
How awesome is that? Great. Yeah. Great. Oh, where do you get jobs like this, eh?
No, you would have to have good internet because somebody's got a static image. They like that pose of you, but it hasn't changed for the last 10 minutes.
Well, I don't know what's going on. You guys are all right. And I don't know.
I've got NBN, mate.
It must be the cable. Yeah, well, you've got NBN. So yeah. There you go. Oh, thank you. All right. Something's just happened. I've pushed a window. Oh, there we go. I don't know what goes on in this computer world. All right.
Call the technician. Tech support.
I know. Let's get a story out, for goodness sake. Now, we've all heard about the Dick Smith, who's, creditors are in. No good.
But I hope you haven't got a gift card, dude.
Oh, yeah, I know. How crazy is that? But anyway, so gift cards, useless. But a bit more on gift cards in a second. But the future of Dick Smith, the future of Dick Smith's owned Apple reseller Mac One is up in the air. Now, I wasn't aware of this, and I don't suppose so many people were. I don't know. You guys might have been. But, you know, when you walk into a Dick Smith store and you find, you see the Apple section, well, apparently that's owned by someone else. But it's owned by Dick Smith now, but it's still a separate entity called Mac One, which was owned by someone else. Yeah. So how crazy is all that getting? But look, I've got a little picture here for people that are on the video. There you go. Now Mac One is up there, so the sale, everything's up in the air. So what they're saying is that it would probably be more beneficial to creditors if the Mac One was sold separately. You know, rather than as a bundle with Dick Smith. So apparently Dick Smith acquired this Mac One 18 months ago, was placed under administration last week, along with the other subsidiaries of Dick Smith. So apparently with the way that it works, is from what I can gather, is that one goes in the receivership, it's a bit of one in, all in. So it's so what they're saying is the Mac One is quite profitable. Well, it is the only profitable one, say, out of the other subsidiaries. So they're saying, well, let's sell that off as a profitable company and then, you know, just let the creditors feed off the rest of it. Because otherwise, if it all goes into receivership, then the creditors can feed off the successful one as well. But that could be a bit of a, you know, like that'd be probably a good question for Eric, but it might have been a bit of a, you know, is that the right thing to do for the creditors? You know, keep out the profitable ones so there's less money in the kitty to go around. I don't know, but anyway,
yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah. So, how else does this say? Not much else here. Dick Smith revealed its store-in-store strategy to open the dedicated Mac One kiosks to service Apple products within existing Dick Smith stores. Mac One's website currently lists 13 service desks in Australia. So Aubrey, Armidale, Camperdown. Oh, so they're not everywhere. Okay. But, yeah, the actual service desks aren't everywhere. So it was founded in 1990. Mac One provided Apple servicing as well as running an education technology business with account executive in Queensland, New South Australia, Capital Territory, Victoria and Tasmania. There you go.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that, you know, Dick Smith did really well when it had components and bits and pieces to for you to buy, but once they just turned into another Hardly Normal or JB, people just, well, I can go to lots of different places to get TVs and washing machines, vacuum cleaners and all that sort of stuff. A lot of the geeky guys were like, well, we love to go in there, but since you guys stopped, J-Car came in and took over.
That's right.
And you've got nothing left to differentiate yourself from everybody else. I mean, when they had the components and the Dick Smith kits and things like that, everybody loved it. And the geeks would go in there and they'd make all their money. And then they're like, oh, it's profitable from big TVs. Let's brand our own. You know, they get the generic Chinese ones, rebrand them, same as Kogan, everyone does, and then go, let's sell a Dick Smith television.
Yeah.
People are like, I don't want a Dick Smith. I want a Samsung.
That's right.
I want a Sony.
Yes.
Who the heck wants a Dick Smith one? I might as well go to Aldi and get an Onyx.
Yeah, Metricon or whatever they are. Median.
Yeah, Median.
But yeah, like you're right, because I remember like when I was growing up, it was Tandy and Dick Smith, and like Tandy was what Dick Smith is now.
Yep.
You know, like it had its own crappy little, you know, cassette players and crappy Opus cassette tapes, you know, and all this sort of rubbish. And then you walk down the road to Dick Smith, who had, it's the J-Car. So things have certainly changed around. But for people that with a gift card, there could be a little bit of hope, actually. And now, for whatever reason, I'll find my mouse here. Maybe when that mouse disappears like that. But, for whatever reason, Woolworths, Kogan and Coles are going to do something with these gift cards. So that's pretty nice of them.
Yeah.
What's happening here is disadvantaged Dick Smith customers, who are the people who have the gift cards, that may have some relief. So Coles, Kogan and Woolies are offering to provide credit for Dick Smith gift vouchers that were declared worthless earlier this week. So Coles and Woolies have revealed that it would offer to exchange any Dick Smith voucher purchased from any of its supermarkets in return for a Coles or Woolies gift card of equal value. So that's not bad. That's pretty good. That's good. So if you got a Dick Smith gift card in your pocket, I'd be in there tomorrow, today, you know, before this stops. Like, I'd be straight in there. Don't sit on this one. The supermarket have announced that while the revenue from Dick Smith gift cards had already been passed onto Dick Smith, the gift card exchange offer has been initiated as a gesture of goodwill. Now, Kogan is offering $25 credit for customers who have a card. I'd be more inclined to go and get me the equal one first.
Yeah.
And do that.
So you get your Dick Smith card, you trade it in for a Coles card, use that to buy a JB Hi-Fi gift card and go buy what you really wanted in the first place.
That's right. Yeah. Well, is it a gesture of goodwill or is there something behind it? So Coles, okay, so you got a $100 Dick Smith voucher, you get a $100 Coles voucher, say their profit on everything is 100%. So say that $100, their cost is going to be $50. Are they thinking further down the track that they might get some money back for these gift cards? Are they just going to, you know, keep them in a cupboard? And then when the receiver's finished, they might say, well, we'll give you 75% back on gift cards. Bang.
Maybe. Make who knows? Money. I mean, gift cards, if you ever watch Dilbert, you know, gift cards are a bad idea because it's people say, oh, it's just like money, but it's not. It's money that you can only spend in one place and it has an expiry date on it, which normal money doesn't. So
I've been saying for years I hate gift cards. Like why would you want them? Like as soon as I get them, if I'm lucky enough to get them, I'll just straight away go and get rid of them straight away. I don't like them.
Catch them in straight away. Yeah, there's so much money. They make billions of dollars out of people whose gift cards are down the back of the couch or in the back of the cupboard or they lost it or something. And now the company keeps that money because you just can't claim it or it runs out after a year and they're like, oh, yeah, I just found that, oh, it expired last week. Oh, well, I guess I can't buy anything with that $100. And the company goes, yep, $300, thanks.
Yeah, I know, crazy stuff. All right, Shane, you got any comments on any of those Woolies stories, Dick Smith stories, or you just want to move on?
No, Yeah, no, nothing more than what we were talking about last week when I asked those questions about, you know, at what point can you go to a Dick Smith and say, all right, I know it's a $500 laptop, but given you need all the money you can get, I'll give you $50 for it.
There was supposed to be a lot of really good sales going on. I'd been into Dick Smith and had a look around the day before that it was announced that they were going belly up, and then I was out the next day, and apparently the next day was the one, if I had gone in there, you could buy like HDMI cables that were $50 each going for $2 or something.
I remember one of our listeners, PA from Canberra, he gets in there on the live stream occasionally. He was telling me that, I don't think we knew that this was what was going on, but he went in to buy some certain products and he rings up and he goes, oh, you should see what's going on at Dick Smith. I've got all these unbelievable, this product for the unbelievable prices and everything. Yeah, and I said, oh, they must just be having a sale, getting rid of their crap. But alas, no. That's what it was.
Yeah, a lot of people also, problem with Dick Smith was the staff. When they have we got a sale, you know, a third price off something or other, if it was just like a tablet or games or Xbox or something, the staff would get in there before opening hours, grab them all and hide them behind the counter or in the back room. Then people come in, they're like, oh, I saw advertised that you got these. Nah, it's sold out. But wow. I was the first person in the shop today. Nah, it's sold out. Magic and stuff.
Yeah, that's nasty. That's naughty. But obviously Dick Smith would have known this was going on. They should have implemented and put the fear of a mystery shopper onto them or something.
Something like that. But even friends of mine in Sydney, I'd be like, I get the email, oh, Dick Smith got a sale on. I'd say, hey, guys, he's got it. They're like, I'm not even going to go down there. It's not worth my time going there.
Yeah. And they used to have the sale, like you'd be able to buy stuff a fair bit cheaper online than what you could in the store. And then you'd...
Oh, I had a ridiculous thing. I went in when I was on holidays at my parents' place on the mid-north coast, New South Wales, and they had a Wi-Fi Kindle that was on sale for like $100 off or something like that. And I went in there and I had a look at it and I was umming and ahhing. I thought, oh, I might wait. And then I went home, talked to Mum and Dad, and Mum's like, oh, yeah, this one that I've got's, you know, falling to bits, not working, so I'd appreciate it if I did get that one. So I went back in the next day. I said, oh, can I get that Kindle at the price that it was on yesterday? They said, no, the price has gone back to normal. I said, well, not on your website. It hasn't. They're like, oh, no, sorry. It was the Asus Google Nexus tablet that I was buying for myself.
That's not what it was.
And I said, but I'll buy it now and give you money now. And they're like, no, we can't do it because the price has gone up. I said, but what about the website? They said, well, you can buy it off the website for that site price. I said, fine, I will. I went back home, and a couple of days later I drove back to Sydney and then just ordered it online, and it arrived the next day for the cheaper price. And I'm like, don't you want the money and commission? You'd just rather say, no, we can't do that, sir.
Yeah, look, I found them to be a bit slack as well. I think I said last week, you know, like ringing them up. Not on numerous occasions, not just a one-off. It was numerous occasions to see if they've had this or that in there. You know, like a little, because they did have some little adapters and, you know, all the little treats sometimes. And it's close to the J-car. So you ring them up, and the phone and the answer just hang out. Like, two bit, not even talking, just a bit. Crazy. Right? But anyway. They're gone, so probably got what they deserved. Yep. Shane, what have you found this week that opened your eyes?
Tickled my fancy? I will start with a Bitcoin story. Bitcoin company to finally list on the ASX. After months of delays, Australian Bitcoin company Bitcoin Group will finally make the share market debut in February. The Melbourne-based company is the first cryptocurrency miner in the world to offer shares through an initial public offering.
Jeez.
I always wonder what IPO stood for, which opened on December 24. It is offering investors 100 million shares at 20 cents each to raise $20 million in the IPO, which closes on January 25th.
Who'd be doing that?
I don't know. Well, if I had money, I'd consider it.
Really?
Wouldn't you?
No.
I'd go for Shears and something else.
Okay. Yeah, let me finish the story and we'll come
back. Still, to me, seems a very dodgy thing to invest in. Just put more money in and buy a Bitcoin.
Mm. Well, how's it different to buying any other currency from, like, you know, Australian dollar? Sorry?
That's not backed by anything. And don't forget the guy in Sydney who ran a thing like MT Gox and then just went, oh, all the Bitcoins, they're gone, buy and shut it down and took all everybody's Bitcoins with him. Because it's not policed, there's no insurance, there's no backing. They can just open and close businesses as they like, and it's not really, it's in the legal grey area.
Look, I suppose, like, if you had money to burn, if you had money, say, a certain amount of money that you thought, well, instead of me going to put on a horse or a casino chip.
If your name's Rupert or James.
Yeah, let's chuck 10 mil at it. You know, if you're James, yeah, he's got, what, a billion, 40 billion or whatever he's got? Not that much, 15 billion or whatever. What's 10 million? Yeah, you could probably get someone like that, but I don't know. So, well, how much would you throw some at it, Shane, if you had some money?
Well, not now, but 5 minutes ago I might have. just like, yeah, you see all these stories with all these tech-based IPOs where, yeah, especially initially, they make a truckload of money.
And that's the thing.
And yet over time they kind of peter out and they might, you know, die a natural death.
Mm.
And I just thought something like this would be one of those similar sort of opportunities. But, I mean, like I said, I don't have money anyway, so.
So I think
just dreaming.
Yeah, so sorry, do you want to finish your little story there?
Yeah, it only just goes on to sort of then say what Bitcoin is, which is it's just obviously, as we know, it's kind of an international monetary kind of thing, not tied to any particular country. It goes on to say that this particular group have, what did they say they had? 6,000 machines. So the Bitcoin group has 5 computer centers in China and is able to create one to two blocks per day using 6,000 machines. For those who don't know how Bitcoins are kind of mined, it's this really hard kind of algorithm that the computers have to work out, and you need to have a truckload of processing power to do that. That's why, I mean, this particular group have got 6,000 machines. They want to raise 18 million, I think it is, in the
IPO.
18 million in the IPO to buy another truckload of machines to sort of, you know, so they can kind of mine more of the currency.
So I guess essentially that's where the profit, that's how the business is supposed to be making money. It's just to be buying machines, that's the expenses, buying computers, and the income will be from suckers like Shane. I mean, just getting Bitcoins,
mining Bitcoins. Like solar power with backup batteries or something, because a lot of people dropped out of Bitcoin mining because the amount of electricity you use during the day to have even one computer sitting there mining through Bitcoins was more than the value of the Bitcoin it made at the end.
Yeah, right. Enough about it to tell me what 1 to 2 blocks a day is worth?
It depends. They keep chopping it down to smaller values. It used to be you could make like a coin every couple of hours or so.
Right.
And then they'd make them more and more scarce as time went on because they made it a finite value. So eventually you could mine over the course of maybe a few days 1/10 of a coin.
Mm.
Then one quarter of a coin, and then 1/100 of a coin, and then you could buy things from people based on the value of like 1/200 of a coin might be worth $5. So if you wanted to spend, you know, money paying somebody in Bitcoins and they were $5, you could give them 1/100 of a coin or something like that.
So what? Because I don't know that much about it. By you explaining it like that. I just thought this dude, Hamachi Kamatachi, whatever his name was, supposedly Australian, I don't know, got raided last week. But anyway, whoever it was, the creator of it, I just thought he created it and then just disappeared, and he literally has. But there obviously is still people that are managing it, isn't there? For them to say, well, if you're going to mine for this long or whatever, then we're going to give you less and less and less. Well, there's someone managing it.
Yeah, there's like a network of people who are it's not just the one person who's in charge. He was the creator of it, but then it became a decentralized system so that people can keep on mining it. In fact, if you do want a good computer to mine it, don't worry about the CPU. It's the GPUs that have more computing power for mining cards, for mining Bitcoin. So if you put in a couple of SLI cards or something like that, then they'll be able to mine better than just a computer with a really fast CPU.
Yeah, it's just how do you get on the table of the board and that? How do people get to where
they know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So you've mined before, Jace?
No.
Yeah, you just had a you got more of an interest in it than me because I didn't know that much about it. But yeah,
over the years, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? So anyway, so if you want to, when was the shares on offer? On December 24th. So there you go. If you're interested, go and throw a lazy 5 mil into it. Well, I'd love you for 5 mil. Throw a lazy 5 grand, they'd still love
you. It's not in my notes, but for some reason. But in the story, I remember them saying that at the time they wrote the story that a Bitcoin was worth $614. I think that's US dollars. And because they sort of said that that's what they kind of accounting on, the fact that their operating costs to mine Bitcoins is going to be pretty constant. And it's the price of the actual Bitcoins themselves where they go up and down. They're working on the law of averages where more often than not it'll be high enough to actually make money versus a tanking.
But one why? Bitcoin equals $622.09.
Wow. So yeah, I don't know. That's just I watched that movie through the week. Just reminded me. I watched that Imitation Game. You guys seen that? About Alan Turing.
Oh, yeah, that'd be brilliant to watch. I've wanted to watch it.
With that Benedict Cumberbatch as Turing.
Yep, Sherlock.
Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. He was treated very harshly.
Oh, yeah,
Just no good
at
all.
Put him in institutions and cut bits off and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't go that far. They didn't go into it like that, but they were told not to talk about what they were doing in the war ever again. And so he, things happened in his life and he got hauled into jail and...
Because he was gay, they said that was against the law, so it didn't matter how clever you were.
Crazy stuff. But a good movie. Good movie. Go and get it out. That's really good. Did you have any stories, Jace, or are you just here to...
Yeah.
Cool.
Actually, I got one that is related to my job, kind of.
All right.
Millions of WhatsApp users are being warned to watch out for a fake email that will install a dangerous virus on their phones. Clever cyber criminals have created a malware which is specifically designed to trick WhatsApp users on either iPhones or Android devices. The virus is being circulated via email and is designed to look like it's been sent by a legitimate source, researchers at Komodo Labs say. Fraudsters hope the user will open the scam email and download the attached virus, which then infiltrates their phone. Mm-hmm. Emails from the criminals may contain sneaky subjects, including new voice message or an audio memo was missed, followed by a play button. Mm. Others have received messages including a brief audio recording has been delivered, a short vocal recording was obtained, and fake notification about a video note. Although none of the emails come from a WhatsApp address, they're disguised with an umbrella branding, Komodo confirmed. The scam email tells users they missed an incoming voicemail or an audio message was missed, among others. WhatsAppers should be aware that all voice memos, audio memos, recording notifications will be received in the app only. Every scam email contains a compressed zip file which unleashes a secret malware onto your phone when downloaded. The virus then duplicates in multiple system folders, adds itself to an auto-run in the computer's registry. Cybercriminals are becoming more and more like marketers trying to use creative subject lines to have unsuspecting emails be clipped and open to spread malware, said Fatih Oren, director of Komodo Anti-Spam Labs. As a company, Komodo is working diligently in creative, innovative technology solutions that stay ahead of the cyber criminals, protect and secure endpoints, and keep enterprises and IT environments safe. So if you get an email that says it's from WhatsApp, delete it straight away because anything to do with WhatsApp will be in the actual app itself.
I get them all the time. And I know they're rubbish because I don't have WhatsApp. So I know they're rubbish. There's a regular Thursday night phone call. Every week that goes off.
I never want to actually for real join Citibank due to the number of email spams that get sent around about Citibank, you know?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So where were we before that? Yeah, WhatsApp. That's right. Yeah. Do you guys use it?
No. Yeah, I have it installed only because the guys I worked with at HP created a group on there. Mostly at the time it was for, I'm going to be late coming in today or something like that, rather than emailing it in or phoning somebody. But now we just use it every now and then. People all do a bit of chatting about what's happening, either with the company that most of us have left or just anything interesting happening at the time.
Yeah. And Shane, you don't use it? No, I think I downloaded it once and I thought, well, okay, you send something, it's there for 1 second when they open it. What's the point of that?
No, that's Snapchat, dude.
Oh, is that the wrong one? Oh, I don't have that either.
WhatsApp is just like Facebook Messenger or something like that, but it goes via your phone number.
Oh, it is too. Oh, I do have that. But no one rings me on it, so that's why. I do have WhatsApp.
Facepalm.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. All these new fang-dangled things coming out. But
in my day, we had a can and a piece of string, and we were happy.
That's right. Did me fine. But another good little...
How long have you been running a technology podcast for, Glenn?
Oh, all these names, they get confusing, you know. I don't know. WhatsApp and this app and that app. I don't know. I can't get hold of them. But anyway, but it made me think about... when you're talking about that collaboration tool that I downloaded, I was invited to a group and I thought, oh, this is good. This is a good little, like a business collaboration tool, which I sent to you guys. I think, Shane, you've seen it. It's called Slack. Have you seen that, Jace?
Yeah, I was using it for a while because I was discussing things with a group of people who do talking about the Google game that you played where you captured towers and stuff around?
Yes.
Ingress.
Yes.
And because there's two opposing teams to be able to discuss where we were going to attack, they created private Slack groups and you had to join on there and get approval and then you could read about what area you're going to take over with the Enlightened team for Ingress.
Yeah, right. Yes. So that's pretty good. I'd never heard of it before. I thought it was a new thing. But then again, there you go. What do I know?
Things that have been out for a few years.
That's right.
It's also one of Leo's sponsors and all that kind of stuff as well. Really? He actually did a big thing on it a couple of weeks
ago. I'm out of touch. I'm way out of touch.
So given that you struggle to remember the name of that game, then Jason, I'm guessing the novelty's worn off.
I enjoyed it. I was playing it for a long time, but now I've got the family life going. I barely have even time for podcasts and things.
Yes. Yeah, it gets like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Where's my show notes? Let's pull another one out of the hat. Apple is finally looking to improve its data munching Wi-Fi assist. Now, I don't know if you've got an iPhone with iOS 9 on it. Yep. There's a function called Wi-Fi Assist, which means that when the iPhone is into an area of bad or low Wi-Fi signal, it'll just flick over to 4G. And not tell you. Yeah, it doesn't tell you. Keeps it a secret. And what happens, obviously, is if you're sitting in a low area, well, you're just there punching away thinking, oh, I'm on Wi-Fi, sweet as, and you're not. So apparently Wi-Fi Assist is still present in the iOS 9.3 Beta 1, which has been released to developers those dudes. The difference is a tiny counter underneath the toggle to enable the Wi-Fi Assist, which tells you how much data has been used by the feature. So, look, that's something. I don't know if that actually does it for me.
Well, it should be off by default, opt-in only.
Yeah, I've turned it off. I think that what it should do is something else. It should maybe, you know, when you're on a hotspot, it turns little blue, the blue up the top of your screen. Yeah. This is on Apple's, on the iPhones. And I think it should turn either blue or another colour or something, and maybe even... So put a counter.
I tell you what, I don't have to worry so much now because I changed back to Telstra. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Because why?
better
$40 a month for 7 gigs.
Yeah. Booyah! Yeah, I know. Isn't that good?
That's just... I got it. I'm going to need it for work too because we had a brief outage from our NBN last week for one day and I spent the day on my Telstra 3G. No problem. Could keep on working.
Hmm.
But because the new job also involves on-call, right. If I'm going to be away from home, I can take my laptop with me and anytime if I get a emergency alert on my phone, I can just jump straight on the laptop, hook it up to Telstra 3G and get to work.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? And $40, I know that just comes out after they just suckered me in for $110 a month.
No.
Yeah, I'm a sucker. You're looking at one.
Yeah, my girlfriend's on the same sort of thing, has like $110 a month and you get piddly what. But because I was on Optus on a month-to-month plan for $30 for 1.5 gigs, and then this came out, I was like, I'd be stupid to not take it.
Actually, I just thought I might actually do the math and see what it is to break.
That's what I did, yeah.
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 Oh, how'd it work out?
Pretty much the same, really. Yeah. So it wasn't worthwhile at this stage, but at some stage later on, it might be worthwhile switching over. But I thought it was a joke when I first saw it. I was like, "There's no way Telstra is going to have $40 for 7 gigs." Come on!
Mm.
And I went to their page and I read through. I was like, "Holy cow!" So I just signed up online. They sent me a SIM in the mail. I activated it, plugged it in, and the day that I was going on the Christmas holidays, I just that minute picked up a hire Kia Carnival 8-seater van because we got five people in the family now. So our little Honda Jazz just doesn't work that well for that when you're going to travel 3,000 kilometres. So hired that, and just as I picked it up, it activated the Telstra SIM. So I was like 7 gigs here, but of course, if you go into the Telstra 24/7 app, it says you've got 6.6 gigs.
Right. Right.
So they probably count as like 1,000 megabytes is a gig or something like
that. They shouldn't be able to do that. That's just
stupid. Should be illegal.
It should be. It should be.
Bait and switch type thing, yeah.
But I think from going into it, because my mum went onto that, and it was only for new customers, I think. But I think for existing customers, there was a $50 a month plan, which was very generous as well.
Yeah,
and but she did. So she was an existing customer. She did. You know, she rings up and she goes, this and that, that and this. And the guy goes, look, I'll send you a SIM, cancel the old one, and I'll hook you up to the new one, and I'll bring the number across when activations tell you to when they ring and say this, you're going to lose everything. Just go, yes, I know, and there's going to be a fee. He goes, I'll wipe it. So if you push them hard, they'll do it.
Excellent.
So anyway, the iPhone and the Wi-Fi Assist, yes, you're right, should be off by default, and I reckon. And
same as the Windows 10, please share all of the patches I've downloaded with everybody else on the internet, thanks.
No! Yeah, why would you want to do that? Yeah.
Please use up all my quota with everyone leeching all my data, thanks.
Yeah. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah. Hmm. All right, Shane, what else have you discovered?
The next one I will do is Dutch police claim that they can crack emails on special encrypted BlackBerries. In a report on Dutch blog, on a Dutch blog that I can't pronounce. Since confirmed by Motherboard, which is a well-known kind of site that looks at all this sort of stuff, the Netherlands Forensic Institute has claimed to break a series of encrypted emails held on BlackBerries modified by Canadian firm Phantom Secure. So I'm assuming that these are the same sort of BlackBerries that up until recently that the President of the United States kind of uses and everyone associated with that. I think he now uses a special iPhone, but up until then I think they were all BlackBerries. But anyway, according to the leaked document, the NFI managed to pull 325 emails off of a device and decrypt 279 of them.
Sweet.
The technique only seems to work when authorities have physical access to a device, which obviously... Yeah, that would be hard, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, unless they bust someone and they got the BlackBerry in their pocket and they say, we'll hand that over and...
Or if you're coming into the country, they can confiscate it.
Mm.
It's what they do a lot in the US. They just go, we need to confiscate that. You'll get it back in a few months if you're lucky.
Right, wow. And what is that a random thing, or they
yeah,
sort of got
just
something?
If they feel like it.
Yeah, right. You can't beat those customs, dude, can you? They're crazy. That's like when people, you hear of people suing people, you know, like, oh, old James down the street, he's not happy with something, so he's going to go and sue the, I don't know, the Land Environment Court or something. Where do people get the money for this? I don't even want to sue bloody the guy that gave me a bogus building report. It's going to be worth it. You know, like,
a lot of time and money and stress, dude.
I know, and you just think, well, what do I want out of him? $2,000 or $5,000? Like, it's not worth it. I just, you stamp up and down a few times and you get over it.
Yeah. Fitbit's getting sued with a class action lawsuit.
Yeah, what was that about? I did read something about that.
Not being accurate.
Filed by customers who say the gadget's measures are wildly and dangerously far off. San Francisco federal court suit claims that the device's heart rate monitors are inaccurate. The heart rate monitoring function of the Pure Pulse trackers is a material, indeed some cases vital, feature of the product. The lawsuit states, one plaintiff said her Fitbit measured her heart rate at 82 beats a minute, while a personal trainer measured it at 160.
Ooh.
Lawyer Jonathan Selbin said he hopes to get refunds for unhappy customers, or at least partial refunds for customers who bought the more expensive watches with the heart monitors. Fitbit fired back and said the civil action suit has no merit and the company plans to vigorously defend the lawsuit.
So from your experience, how's the Fitbit go?
I tried
it. How have you been since your last heart attack?
I haven't actually been using it. I went back to the Pebble before Christmas because I get better alerts and things on there, and I can pick different faces. The watch face I've got now shows me my last three calendar appointments plus the time, and I can read and cancel or answer phone calls that come in, and I can also read text messages or other messages that come in, Facebook Messenger can come through the watch, which Fitbit only gets text messages and that's it. So my iPhone, if you have one of the later ones, it has its own built-in step counters and stuff, and you can synchronize that up to Fitbit anyway.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd carry the iPhone with me whenever I go out anyway, so it's going to measure the steps. So I gave my Fitbit to my girlfriend, but she had a severe allergic reaction to the material in the band.
Oh, yes.
And the whole arm just went red with this rash, so she can't wear it, but she really loved it. But I might have to get one of the clip-on ones for her.
Yeah, you can't change the bands?
No, it's all built in.
Yeah,
but I tried it when I was at the gym and I was running on the treadmill, and the treadmill has got its own heart monitors, and the Fitbit was pretty close to it that I was using.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I've got much. Like, I've got that Fitbit Charge, I think it is, HR, and it's, it seems pretty right.
Yeah, I got the Surge, and it's like just a normal watch, and this big face one, and it seemed to be fine, so.
You haven't opened your drink, Shane.
No, because it makes a noise when I open it.
You're saving it for Ron.
if you want me to open it now.
Well, now that we've spoken, if you want to open it, let everyone get prepared. Shane is going to open his drink. Ooh, does make a noise. Don't do that on the show again, thanks.
That's it. You're never coming on the show.
That's right.
Again, we tricked him. High five, Glenn. He fell for it.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
Just for those people's benefit that on the audio, it's Pepsi Max. It's nothing alcoholic. I always drink Pepsi Max. This is the third Pepsi Max that I've drunk during the show. If Pepsi Max or Pepsi want to sponsor me or the show, feel free to get in contact with me.
Oh, fair dinkum.
It's Shane at AussieTechHeads.com.au.
Yeah, it should be shame, not shame. A shameless
like
begging for some free Pepsi Max. Oh, well, if it works, Shane, there'll be more of that coming. All right. South Australia is going to trial digital driver's licences. It's already been happening in New South Wales. Your licence, instead of getting the plastic beast, you'll be able to show it on your phone. So I suppose that's good, isn't it? I've taken a picture of mine anyway, just in case I forget about it. Forget it when I'm driving. So the pilot program will see the government issue digital tokens that are stored online and can be accessed from mobile devices, which it hopes will eventually supersede physical licences. Alongside driver's licences, the scheme will eventually incorporate other forms of identity, such as seniors cards, national park passes, boat licences and trade certificates.
They should whack it on your Apple Watch too.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? Yes. The program will be offered initially on an opt-in basis, and plastic cards will still be available to people who don't use a smartphone. And there you go. Yeah, yeah. Look, it's all moving that way, isn't it? You know?
Yep.
I remember the Australia card, there was a bit of a hullabaloo about that, but that's there anyway.
Well, as long as they got your social security number and your tax file number, they've got all the new info that the Australia card was going to have anyway, so it doesn't
matter. Yeah, that's right, yeah. And, you know, and if everything goes to your phone, well, yeah, it's less stuff in your wallet, isn't it, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. What else, Jace? Have you got anything else?
Well, in Pembroke, Ontario, parent Lance Perkins got the shock of a lifetime on December 23 when he discovered his 17-year-old son had racked up more than $11,000 on in-app purchases through his Xbox video gaming system.
Oh, dear.
Perkins told CBC News that the credit card his son used was designated for emergencies and to make purchases for the family's convenience store. According to Perkins, his son thought the bill, which totaled $10,911, would be a one-time charge for a purchase he made for a FIFA series soccer game. Perkins said he's just as sick as I am because he never believed he was being charged for every transaction or every time he went into the game. When he reached out to his credit card company, Perkins was told that nothing could be done unless he wanted to charge his son with fraud. Xbox agreed to look into the matter after learning Perkins' son was a minor but hasn't heard back since.
Mm.
While the FTC has measures in place that protect consumers from in the US from exorbitant billing, the rules in Canada are a bit more lax.
Yeah, look, it is easy to buy on the Xbox because I got the Xbox 360 and it's sort of like, yeah, it says you want to go in to buy something, it says, are you sure? You go, yes. And pretty much that's it. It's sort of straight away. It's not, I'm used to like a couple of are you sures. But this one is just a bang, that's done. And look, like the kids are up there playing probably now. That's why the internet's bad. But then they're probably playing. And look, I mean, they could purchase something. Like they could just start doing this sort of
stuff.
Let's
hope they don't listen to the show.
Yeah, but I mean, but there's nothing.
Dad said we can buy anything anytime. Awesome.
Woohoo. But they don't. There's no safeguard, I suppose. Like with the iPhone, put your password in again and all this sort of stuff. Once you've set your account up, it says buy okay.
Apple got burned by that with lawsuits as well because once you entered in your password once for that day, for the rest of the day, it would keep on accepting. Mm. Do you want to buy this? Yep. Automatic. But then now they added in after, several versions of the OS back, you can have it ask for it again after 2 minutes or something like that or immediately for every single purchase.
Yes, that's right.
Our Xbox works different because I'm sure when Regan does something like that, it actually stops him and then someone like myself has to, as the parent, has to come in and put in my password. Right. To then allow him to continue doing it.
Maybe they just let the kids play on their account.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
He's the security technical guy.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't know. I couldn't be bothered setting up other accounts. Not that I will. Yeah, okay. I might have to look into that. I will look into that.
The other thing is where does it – because with the Xbox, at least with us anyway, you can put credit card details on your account or you can leave that blank, so therefore you have to put them in every time you want to buy something.
Right.
And I've done it where, yeah, you have to put the credit card in every time you want to buy something. So I guess in two ways I'm kind of covered with that, yeah, but if you're going to let your kids use your other one. But just going back to that thing where, I mean, if I was given the option to say, well, you have to charge your kids with fraud, I probably would.
Well, what would happen? You know, like if they're a minor, nothing would happen. And if they're like 18, probably nothing would happen.
They'll have a criminal record, and that's just the start of a spiral into drugs and money laundering.
What do you want to do, son, when you grow up? I want to be the next Steve Jobs in America. You can't. You got a record because I dobbed you in for, for fraud, sucker.
Hey, speaking of which, I know I'm going back to last week. I know I'm going back to last week's show, and I know, well, I don't know whether he's actually doing it facetiously or whether he's actually doing it legitimately, but the McAfee dude, how he's running for president.
Oh,
he can't, can he? Because he's got a criminal record.
you know, anyone can run. Doesn't mean that. Look what's happening now.
He's a bit loopy, that one.
Yeah, oh, very loopy. I don't even know. What side is he on? Who's he? Is he independent, I think, isn't he?
There's also this other guy who reckons he's going to go for it called Donald something or other. I don't know.
Go, Trumpy.
Yeah, that's the scary thing is he's doing all right.
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, it's just it's a great spectacle. It's entertainment. It's great. I love it. Shane, who's up? Oh, I'll go.
Yeah, I'll have a go.
Okay, yep.
All right, the next story I have got is got a lot of notes on it, but essentially it's a quick story. The BBC Research and Development Video Coding Research Team focused on evaluations of UHD content and definitions of analytics. God, how many big words can they put in the one sentence? As part of a standardization process, has presented its paper in. Basically, what's happened is some research done, and out of that research, it was suggested that the new H.265 codecs were 50% more efficient than the previous thing, and the BBC Research and Development Video Coding Team have basically just verified those findings.
Mm.
So the High Efficiency Video Coding HEVC standard has been developed jointly by the two standardisation bodies, ITU and ISO. The main goal of the process was to provide significantly improved video compression compared with its predecessor of H.264 being the most recent. HEVC standards was ratified in 2013 as H.265, so it's been around for 2 years already, by the ITUT, and as MPEG-H Part 2 by ISO IEC. There's a whole lot of abbreviations and stuff in this story. The purpose of the subjective test was to verify using human viewers the compression gains of the new video coding standard, and that had previously been estimated using objective metrics, essentially what I just said earlier. The subjective test used a carefully selected set of coded video sequences at four different picture sizes, UHD, which is 3,840 by 2160, and 4,096 by 2048, so 4K and probably 2K, 1080p, 720p and 480p at frame rates of 30 hertz, 50 hertz and 60 hertz. And then the tests of UHD and 720p picture sizes were conducted at the BBC R&D labs under controlled viewing environments, complying with a whole bunch of other standards and recommendations on visual quality assessment.
Mm. Well, hopefully it's not going to change too much too soon, because I just bought a lot of stuff that takes .H.264, so yeah, it's sort of self-encode, so hopefully they can update it. But anyway, but that sounds good. Like, obviously, anything that reduces, you know, size of files and all that with video, it's got to be good. It's got to be good.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't affect the quality, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah. Now, Tim Cook, we've had word that how much people get paid at Apple has come out. So Tim Cook, $14.6 million Australian.
That's a lot of cookies.
That's a lot of cookies. That's like a paid package. Probably. He probably would be. He's got a big... Oh, I can't say that, can I? Well, there's no other way to say it. you know, you get pay and shares and all that sort of stuff. Yep. So it's a big package.
Yep.
Yeah. So Chief Financial Officer Lucia Maestri, she gets paid $35.9 million. So that's like double what Cook gets. Senior Vice President for Retail and Online Stores, Angela Ardence, $25.8 million. Jeez, it's crazy stuff. Yep. Crazy stuff. Why would they get paid more than old Timmy? Cook is also below on the ladder of pay to the Vice President in charge of Internet Software and Services, Eddie Q, Senior Vice President in charge of Hardware Engineering, Dan Rico, and General Counsel and Secretary Bruce Sewell in the pay ranking. So That's what's going on. Tim Cook's upset he's not getting enough coin. That's why he's not pushing products out. He's like, people pay more than me. Let them do it. Yeah, so all three of those, the last three I just mentioned, earned $25 million in the year. All three roughly $25 million in the year. So the notable omission was Johnny Ive. I wonder what he gets paid. He'd be a squillion. Yeah. He'd be heaps, wouldn't he?
Yep.
He would be on a lot of money. But, yeah, like, so, Tim, 14.6, where's my calculator? I think I turned my phone off. Let me, I'll just do a calculation here. I want to see how much $14.6 million is a week. Any guesses?
Nope.
14.
A bit more than unemployment.
0.6 million. Jeez, that's too many zeros. Divided by 52. Oh, nice. It's imagine this in your bank account every week. $280,769. Isn't that crazy? What would you do with that every week? Yeah.
Whatever you wanted to.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. All right. Jace, what else? You got anything else?
I was just having a look through the Wikipedia page on the Bitcoins we were talking about before. As of 2015, even if all miners in a mining pool used energy-efficient processes, the combined electricity consumption generating Bitcoins would be 1.46 terawatt-hours per year, equivalent to the consumption of 135,000 American homes.
Wow.
In 2013, electricity use was estimated to be 0.36 terawatt-hours, equivalent to powering 31,000 homes.
Wow.
So yeah, it says to be able to generate it, yeah, it says unless you've got specifically purpose-built systems, usually spending the money you spend on electricity is more than what you'll make out of Bitcoin mining.
That's crazy. That's just crazy, isn't it? I don't know. Go and look use your computing power for looking for aliens. Something a bit better.
Do the folding at home, and you can find out about the help fight disease.
That's the one.
Well, that cancer one that we were talking about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, protein.
Yeah, it's just amazing how much electricity that just consumes when you start adding stuff together, and like to what end to get an electronic currency?
And the problem also is, for Bitcoin, your wallet exists only on your current computer that you're on now. So if your computer crashes, you lose any Bitcoins you had there because there's one file on the computer that has your wallet, which has got your coins in it or bits of a coin.
You can't change the wallet around to a different...
You can copy it onto another computer and just use it from that computer instead. But if you've been generating on this computer and it crashes, you lose that, which is something that... Chain probably know because he listened to Leo's shows. He was talking about a guy who a year or two ago had 800 bitcoins, which was worth maybe $1 million or $2 million, on a hard drive, which he put in a drawer. He'd generated them when the bitcoins started. And he got to 800 bitcoins, and then he upgraded his computer and moved the hard drive into a drawer, and then when it came out that Bitcoin's value went through the roof, he went looking for the hard drive and realized that he'd thrown it in the bin.
Oh, no.
And it went to a garbage tip somewhere in the US. So
they sit on the computer until you put them in your wallet?
No, your wallet is on the computer. It only exists on your computer in your virtual, quote, wallet.
Right.
It doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. So you can go to somewhere and bank it or convert it into real dollars, but the actual Bitcoin values themselves is on whatever computer you're using to mine them at the time.
Right. But so why didn't he move his wallet to the new computer?
He just forgot about it when he rebuilt his computer. He bought a new hard drive, installed Windows, installed all the usual stuff. Yeah. It was like, I'm not going to worry about that Bitcoin stuff. I've got other work and games and stuff to do. And then when it came out that they were worth so much, he's like, oh, I better get that hard drive back and get my wallet. Oh, it's gone.
Dull. Can you can you back these little Bitcoin wallet files up to Dropbox or somewhere?
Yeah, copy it to another computer or something like that. But once you log in with your credentials and it reactivates that one wallet file. You can't have them on half a dozen computers and then have them all together or anything like that.
Right. You know, a lot of thought's gone into this, hasn't it?
Yeah. They had to make sure.
And so what are the people that created it? What are they getting out of it? They just create Bitcoins at their leisure and just going to spend them.
Yeah, I guess so.
Nice.
Why not?
Exactly. Why not?
You were talking about Apple updates before. So Apple's forthcoming operating system update was released to beta testers this week and feedback has been promising. While the tech giant hasn't announced an official release date, iOS 9.3 promises to include a number of big changes. Night Shift. Now, you guys have heard of the Flux application that takes the blue out of your screen as the night progresses, and then eventually your screen is a bit orange, but it's better for your circadian rhythms, help you sleep.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
If you're watching your TV or laptop or phone and you've got this bright white light shining in your face, it makes sleeping difficult, a bit of a problem. You can download a free app for Windows and Mac called F.LUX.
Right.
It'll detect, if you tell it where, or it can auto-detect where your longitude and latitude is, then it gets when sunrise, sunset is, and as the sun sets, it slowly tints your screen more orange and takes the blue out of it, which is supposed to disrupt your sleep. Right. So Apple's new 9.3 is going to have something like that built in called Night Shift.
Yes.
Using the clock and geolocation of your device, the color of the display will gradually shift to the warmer end of the spectrum after nightfall before returning to normal in the morning. Apple said this feature had been designed to help people get better shut-eye. Many studies have been shown that exposure to bright blue light in the evening can affect your circadian rhythms and make it harder to fall asleep. And health app, as the fitness industry continues to boom, Apple's made it easier to find third-party apps to track your health and wellness. Categories such as weight, workouts, and sleep have a new slider menu that reveals great apps that you can easily add to your health dashboard, Apple wrote. Additionally, the health app syncs perfectly with your Apple Watch to ensure all your health metrics are in one easy-to-find location.
Nice.
CarPlay. Need to find a local servo, coffee shop, or restaurant? The nearby feature in Maps will point you to the right direction with a simple tap of a button. With iOS 9.3, CarPlay will also introduce new and For You features from Apple Music. They'll see songs, artists, and albums handpicked by experts, plus selections based on your preferences displayed in your car's dashboard. And news, the new operating system will give you the news you want, even more personalized. Articles in For You have been better tailored to suit your particular interests, and trending topics will also be shown in editor's picks. On your iPhone, you can view everything in landscape, and when you check for updates, later stories appear much faster, so you can catch up on the day's events quickly and easily. Mm. And they've got the new, I think something like Force Touch, they call it, on 6S and the 6.
Yes.
And they're going to bring some new things to that. So if you go to, I think it's the Settings app, if you Force Touch on there, it'll pop up a little menu which will allow you to turn on and off your Wi-Fi, airplane mode and things like that. Oh, plus a few other apps have been updated with that as well.
Yeah, that's all right. I know that nightshade thing, whatever you're talking about, that's going to be good because I know when you go to bed, like, well, you do, you just, last thing you do is check your Facebook. And I know you got to wind down the brightness. I do because it's just it's too bright. And you wind the brightness down, so that should come in handy. A couple of good little things there, Jace. Good stuff. Are you out, Shane, or you got another
one? No, I got heaps more. No, I got about another three more.
Oh, he gets talk all bloody night.
Oh, well quickly, we'll go through those, and because I've got one more to go as well. So go through yours.
All right, I'll do this quick one, this movie-related one first. Australian Pirates may be behind record mass movie screen as leak. Hollywood, see, again, we've been, you know, we're the world champions at something else. Hollywood has broken two very different records this holiday season. Star Wars, which I'm assuming all three of us have seen now.
Yay! Yes,
that was good.
It was brilliant. We went and saw it in gold class for the win.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I saw it in VMAX. That was good. I liked it. I think it was the best one yet.
Yeah.
All right, so The Force Awakens has become the first movie to reach $1 billion in gross sales in 12 days.
That's a B.
Yes, billion, yes. Apparently, I think it's still behind Avatar, but, I mean, Avatar's been out for, what, 10 years now? And so it'll catch that, easy. Yeah. All right, so the other record, however, is one that the movie industry will not be so proud of. According to Torrent Freak, movie pirates have released 12 DVD quality movie previews called screeners for download on the internet. These screeners feature movies like the latest James Bond, Spectre, the Tarantino movie The Hateful Eight, which is only just come out, I think. A list of others include Serengeti, Legend, In the Heart of the Sea, Joey, Steve Jobs, wouldn't mind saying that, Spotlight, Creed, and Concussion, The Danish Girl, and Bridge of Spies. Screener DVDs are typically sent to a range of movie producers, critics, and movie award voters under strict conditions to avoid films being leaked. Security mechanisms are built into the films that can theoretically tie a particular movie back to a specific person sent the screener.
Has the definition of screener changed? Because I thought a screener was someone that's filmed the movie in a cinema.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, but I think the definition must have changed.
Yeah, well, this is more of a legit the definition anyway.
Oh, legit. Oh, good.
The FBI are already investigating how a copy of The Hateful Eight linked to Andrew Kosov, the co-CEO of film production finance company Alcon Entertainment, wound up in the hands of movie pirates. Hive CMate, are thought to be a loose collective of individual movie pirates associated with the website CrikeyMate.com, which makes money from early releases of the movies to subscribers to the site. The site appears to be run... I read this first half of this sentence and I thought, the site appears to be run by Australians, given the name. And I thought, that's a bit of a stretch. And then I read the rest of it where it says, the Australian cultural reference and the location of the Twitter accounts, which are Melbourne. I thought, okay, well, that's a bit more kind of justification, I suppose. The site is allegedly not responsible for the process of producing the pirated movies, nor does it host the content. So it's like a little Pirate Bay thing where it kind of just points you in the right direction. Last week, five of the UK's most active movie pirates were sentenced to a total of 17 years in prison for their releasing of 2,500 films. In all likelihood, movie piracy is going to be something that the industry will just have to live with. As long as the incentives to use high-quality previews still exist. It is no coincidence that Disney has chosen not to send preview copies of Star Wars to anyone.
Well, here we go. I looked it up for you. Cam and Telesync are the ones where they film it in a movie theater. A screener is early DVD or Blu-ray disc releases of theatrical version of a film, typically sent to movie reviewers, Academy members and executives for review purposes. A screener normally has a message overlaid on its picture with wording similar to, the film you're watching is a promotional copy. If you purchase this film at a retail store, please contact 1-800-NO-COPIES to report it. Mm. Or more commonly, if released for the awards consideration, simply for your consideration. Apart from this, some movie studios release their screeners with a number of scenes of varying duration shown in black and white. Aside from this message, the occasional black and white scene, screeners are normally of only slightly lower quality than retail DVD rip due to the smaller investment in DVD mastering for the limited run. Some screener rips with the overlay message get cropped to remove the message and get released mislabeled as DVD rips.
Well, there you go. So what we might do is I'll get my light's going to explode.
The dodgy switch you're talking about.
The dodgy switch, that's right. Now, look, Shane.
What's code? Help.
You've got another couple of stories that we might not get to this week, but they'll be in the show notes. The Australians join global protest against laws to weaken encryption. And where was your other one? Let's have a look at that one.
It's almost like you got like a poltergeist going on.
Oh, that's crazy, I know. I'm going to have a fit in a minute. Now, hard-coded password raises new backdoor eavesdropping fears. And there's your little picture there. So that's from... So that's about some hacking stuff. So, good stuff. Now, look, I just wanted to rush through there because I've got one more to go. And I had to... normally I would leave it, but I just wanted to get this out because it's topical. It's You know, this week we did The World Lost David Bowie, and everyone knows about that.
That was very sad.
It was very sad, and, you know, long live his music. His last album is out, so you can find that on Spotify first, Black apparently. Star. Yeah, and now it's on iTunes. They finally caught up. So
well, I was reading about that. They said that the song actually went for 12 minutes, but iTunes won't release any songs that are longer than 10 minutes, so they had to cut it for iTunes.
You're kidding.
Yep, and then re-release it as a 10-minute one, so they made it 10 minutes just about everywhere because of iTunes.
All right. I'm not going to comment on that. It's just ridiculous. Well, who cares how long it is?
Yeah. Apple should just let it go.
Well, what's the problem? Like, maybe if it's old Joe Blow, it just plays a bloody flute or something that's no good to anybody. Yeah, cut him off at 10 minutes. Anyway, this story is just not about reminiscing or another Apple hate story. But look, if you go in the show notes, there is a 16-minute interview with David Bowie back in about year 2000, I think it was, from the BBC. So check that interview out. It's very good. But did you know, and the reason why I bring it up is I'll go through a couple of these quick, tidbits that you might not have known about David Bowie before we go. It was a time before Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and even MySpace. So way back then, if you can remember, I can't. More artists provided little if no material to their followers. But Bowie's platform not only offered a wide variety of exclusive content, but also several ways to interact with the singer himself. He was an internet pioneer. Did you know he had a thing called BowieNet? Now, this is...
Wow.
Yeah, this is way, way back. This is like 90s, probably early to mid-90s. BowieNet operated as a full internet service provider as well in the US and UK, competing with AOL, Clarinet and others. Never heard of Clarinet. For a monthly fee, members got a @davidbowie.com ending email address and exclusive access to audio recordings, music videos and chat rooms where the singer participated himself. He would never announce it in advance, but he would get onto the chat board and talk to us. The handle he always called himself was Sailor, says one guy. Bowie also used the service to create what became known as the world's first cyber song. Fans were invited to send in lyrics to help co-write a track, and 80,000 people responded. The singer said he had read through many himself. There are a lot of potty ones, he said, and eventually chose a submission by a 20-year-old American about the idea of having a virtual life on the internet.
Yeah.
Fans were invited to watch the track being recorded via a 360-degree interactive webcast, a technology that is only just becoming like to the fore today. So you see Leo walking around the 360. The song, if you're interested, is called What's Really Happening, and it featured on the Hours album. He was one of the first artists to release an internet-only single. Telling Lies was downloaded by more than 300,000 people before later being sold as a physical single. Bowie took part in 1999's NetAid charity concert, which was streamed on the web to more than 2 million people for a record for its time. Well, 1999 at dial-up speeds. Oh, my goodness. That made a great little streamer.
Yep.
And about 7 or 8 years ago, although you could still log into BowieNet, doesn't seem to be many updates. In 2006, Bowie's ISP business was quietly retired, but it was not until 2012 that his Facebook page confirmed what many already knew, a simple post that he posted up there. BowieNet, as we have known, is kaput.
Ah.
So there you go.
Wish I had known all those years ago.
Yeah, look, there's a bit more to that story. Just jump in the show notes and link across to it, and also watch the video. It's an interview. So it's very good. And it's just stuff, you know, you think, oh, yeah, singer, blah, blah, blah. But no, he was right into technology, and he was right into it. So, yeah, it was good to read. All right, that's it. Thank you. Thanks, Jace, for coming in.
No worries,
mate. Hope to see you again soon. If you're not on holidays, like you are all the time these days. Okay, good stuff. And thanks, Shane. We'll see you again probably next week.
Yeah, at this stage, yeah.
All right.
Can't get rid of him that easy.
Nah, that's right. I wish he'd get a job.
I wish I'd get a job.
Get a haircut and get a real job, mate.
All right, and everyone else. Look, I'm sorry if the audio was a bit dodgy this week, but look, I've got some new stuff coming, some new hardware, and I was plugging in, and look, just before the show, things didn't quite get plugged all back in properly, and so some things went amiss. So hopefully, you put up with it, and we appreciate it. All right, so until next time, you hear us. It's bye for now. Ta-da.
Bye.
Yeah.
Aussie Techhead is produced by The Secret Hub and recorded on the Gold Coast, Australia. Please visit our website and take part in our discussions forums at www.aussietechhead.com. Views expressed in the preceding audio do not necessarily represent those of Aussie Techhead or The Secret Hub. Thank you for downloading, and we'll see you next episode. Bye for now.